Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
You would like to be able to put your foot on their throat and let them know and remind them one more time, we're still the king of this division, we're still boss, and you're still fighting for a playoff spot, so play for second.
And we're underway with Altuve drilling one deep to left field. This game starts with a home run. Jose Altuve's 9th leadoff home run of the season, most in the major league.
Would you consider them a threat in the division right now?
And Pena hits one high and deep to left field. Winker all the way back. He'll watch this one go. Back-to-back jacks to start the game. Altuve and Pena. It's 2-0 Astros.
Yeah, I mean, we're not really thinking about them.
This ball poked into shallow left center field. It could drop, and it does. Two runs will score. Maldonado with his hands in the air with a 2-RBI base hit.
Hands in his air like he just didn't care. Martin Maldonado, the Astros sweep the Seattle Mariners over the weekend. The Astros did to the Mariners what the Patriots did to the Letterman jacket Houston Texans. That was quite the weekend. Quite the weekend in Seattle. You know, I think the Astros get bored throughout the regular season. But you come out of the All-Star break, you're playing the New York Yankees twice in a doubleheader. They're no rival. They're no foe. The Astros took care of business there.
Did you ever have a doubt in your mind?
That they were going to sweep?
Even a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't think they were going to sweep the Mariners.
Not necessarily that they were going to sweep, but that they were going to win the series and look dominant doing it.
I envisioned a scenario in which they go to Seattle and take one of three. Yeah.
Yeah. I never had a doubt in my mind that the Astros were going to wipe the floor with them. Never. Never. And the farther we go into the season with the way different guys from different areas at different levels keep stepping up for this team over the stretch of the last few weeks, there is no doubt in my mind that this is the best and hottest team in baseball and will continue to be that moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, do the Astros finish with the best record in the American League? I don't know. Like, I don't think they care that much because the Astros know when the lights are the brightest, they're going to show up. When they're playing the Yankees 7 times this year, they win 5 of the 7, 4 of those being at Yankee Stadium. 2 of the games that you lost, you should have won both. You had the lead very, very late. The Mariners are the hottest team in baseball. They've won 14 games in a row. T-Mobile is going to be loud. Listen, dog, let's make the Astros' life miserable. And then the Mariners never lead at all in that series.
Yeah.
Like, the Astros know when to step up. Like, and then they're probably going to lose 2 of 3 to the A's because I think they get bored during the regular season. But when it's time to step up, the Astros step up. The Mariners are not the Astros, was like my biggest takeaway over the weekend. Because here you go. You got an upstart team, right? You got Julio Rodriguez, one of the best stars in all of baseball. He's in the lineup on Friday, and then all of a sudden, oh, he's a late scratch. Why is he a late scratch? Because his wrist is hurt because he finished runner-up in the home run derby. Let's not forget that very night, Mariners owner John Stanton was giving Julio Rodriguez a hug, telling him how proud he was. I'm so proud of you, Julio Rodriguez, for winning the silver medal in a home run derby that it's going to force you to miss the 3 biggest games of our season. But how proud do you think Seattle's owner John Stanton is of Julio Rodriguez?
Don't be that mad. Look, I have 2 wonderful kids, and my kids are better than pretty much everybody else's kids. When I get proud of my kids, it means something. But, like, I'm not going to bemoan other parents who are saddled with bad kids and the kids that just aren't as good as my kids. So I'm going to allow them to be proud. You got to allow him to be proud of good old J-Rod over there in Seattle. I have said this for the longest time. I never, ever, 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 ever want any of my biggest stars participating in the home run derby.
Yeah.
There are too many problems that come up after the fact. Even it's not even injuries. It messes with their swing. It messes with what they've been doing all season. The home run derby is the worst for a guy on your team who is one of your best hitters, and Seattle feels that. But, like, you can't be mad at the guy for being proud at second place.
Oh, give me a break.
Somebody's got to be second place, and somebody has to be the parents of the second place kids. And that's all that's happening right there.
If you're hugging one of your players and telling him how proud you are of him after he finished second place in an exhibition,
it's a little insufferable.
Like, you haven't won anything since 2001. It's forced you to miss the best series in a decade in Seattle, 2 decades in Seattle. They're selling out T-Mobile Park on Friday. It wasn't really sold out Saturday and Sunday. I wonder why. Because, like, this was their World Series. They flat out called it that. Their fans on Twitter calling it their World Series, and then your best players not playing in the World Series, that you self-proclaimed it. Meanwhile, the owner is hugging you for your second-place finish. But regardless of that, like, eliminate that. Yordan Alvarez and Jose Altuve, like, they're not seeking fame and accolades, right? Yordan Alvarez went on the injured list before the Home Run Derby, was probably not going to participate in the Home Run Derby because his hand's still howling at him, which is a topic of conversation that we should probably get to at some point because it is concerning. You have Jose Altuve, who played in the two games before going to the All-Star game, and it's like, I'm good. I don't need it. I've been an All-Star my entire life. I don't need to go. Why? Because the Astros have World Series on their mind. They have real goals on their mind, not fame, not popularity. I heard people in this city saying, Yordan needs to participate in the Home Run Derby to increase his marketability. Why, man? You're trying to win a World Series. Like, why do you need to increase the marketability for a dude that's already been paid when you have postseason and World Series aspirations? Like, the Astros are the team that does that. And look, they've been scorned. The Astros all missed the All-Star game last year by self-choice. They didn't want to go because they felt like they were the figurehead of the sign-stealing scandal and all of that. But you look at this Astros team. They win when it matters. They don't get intimidated by the big, bad New York Yankees. They don't get intimidated by an upstart that's won 14 games in a row. They just go crush them all as Yordan hangs out at the house during home run or during the All-Star game and the Home Run Derby. Altuve hangs out because they have the bigger goals in mind. The Mariners just aren't the Houston Astros.
No, of course they're not. And it's hilarious. It was hilarious watching Mariners fans act like they could actually step in and try to compete with the Astros at that level. The Yankees couldn't even do that. We watched them in this season-long series against the Yankees all year. The only reason the Yankees have gotten wins are because of clutch moments at the end of games. It's not even like they've dominated the Astros. They've barely been able to compete with them, and the Yankees are the best team. And I don't know what made Mariners fans think that they could come in and, oh, yeah, this is our World Series. That's the mind. I hate that mindset. I hate that mindset of, like, to your point, and you're really playing for an actual World Series, if you're playing for championships, your mindset isn't come into this game against this team, or, like, this team is coming into our home stadium, they're coming into our house, and this is our World Series, we're going to sell out, they're not going to be able to handle it. Yeah, like, they haven't been dealing with people's jeers and sold-out stadiums for the last, I don't know, forever years now. Like, that mindset is what's the problem with Seattle, because it's not just their fans. You could see it with their owner hugging J-Rod after getting second place in the Home Run Derby. That's Seattle in a nutshell. And I heard Paul talk about this a little bit earlier. Like, he feels like Mariners fans are a lot like Texans fans. They just really haven't ever been there. They haven't really felt success, so they don't know how to handle it when just a little bit comes their way. And what I liken it to is whenever you haven't eaten in a long time. Let's say you haven't eaten all day, and you're doing a fast, and you haven't eaten, and then you get like a cracker, like one of those like Keebler's crackers. You're like, this is one of the greatest things I've ever eaten in my entire life. But you haven't eaten in like 36 hours. Of course, that cracker tastes delicious. But if you go try to eat a Keebler cracker after you just had like a 5-course meal at a nice restaurant, that cracker sucks. It's awful. Right? So the Astros are eating 5-course meals of seasons and championships and World Series runs, and the Mariners just haven't seen anything in years and don't know how to behave or act around that, but they're not even close. Are they an upstart team? For sure. Yeah. Do they have some talent? Are we going to see them start to get better? Are they possibly an issue moving forward? Not this year, but 2-3 years from now? Yeah, for sure. They have to go through those growing pains, but now when you see them against the competition, and this is their World Series, and they get absolutely mollywopped, there's no contest between these two teams. So of course the Mariners aren't the Astros. The Mariners are like, if anybody could say the Mariners are the Astros, let's say they're like the 2015 Astros,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I could see where that's a good comp, because I think that the Mariners are still going to make the playoffs. If the season ended today, the Mariners still very much in the hunt. I believe they're still one of the wild card teams, too, in the American League if the season ended today. Yeah, they had to have the last wild card. They're 2 games up on the Guardians of Cleveland. So I still think that Seattle's going to make the playoffs. Their pitching staff's pretty good. The Astros got to it over the week, although I like that Gilbert kid. The Gilbert kid's pretty good.
Yeah.
They're going to get Julio Rodriguez back at some point, you would think. They've not placed him on the injured list, so I think they're trying to avoid an injured list assignment for Julio Rodriguez. But, I mean, he did not appear in the series. And there were some big spots where it's like, okay, go to the bench here. We need a big hit. Because Seattle made it a bit of a sweat on Saturday. They made it a little bit of a sweat yesterday on Sunday. Never led in the series, but, you know, made it competitive, right? The score, look at the scoreboard. I saw some Twitter fans in Seattle talking about that, too. Well, our guys tried hard. They made the Astros sweat, which was like, cool, man. That's great. Awesome that you're making them sweat.
It goes back to the kid thing. Like, if your kid's outside playing left field in a baseball game, what can you tell him? He goes 0-for-3 at the plate. He's playing left field because he can't catch and he can't throw. Of course, as the parent, you have to be like, well, look, at least you went out there and you tried really hard, man. Yeah. It's all about effort. You know, that's just learn to play as a member of the team, learn to be a good teammate. And all we can ask is you go out there and try really hard. And versus the kids who dads are playing, like the dads of the kids who are playing shortstop and slinging it and going 4-for-4. It's like, no, trying hard isn't good enough. You have to perform. And that's the difference between the two fan bases. Like, the people that wanted Yordan Alvarez to go into the home run derby, could you imagine if that exacerbated the hand issue?
Oh, they don't
and we
care
lost,
about that.
Right.
No.
They should, they but you're right. That. They don't.
They care about the marketability and how he can be the next star.
That marketability, home run derby, does it help with marketability? For sure, a little bit in the short term. You want to know what else helps with marketability? Having huge moments in the World Series and winning a championship. That helps so much more than a measly little home run derby. And look, baseball's not good at marketing players anyway, so it's not like any kind of marketability is going to be long-lasting and long-standing, so that's ridiculous. But there's a massive difference between the feel of all of the other AL West teams and pretty much all of the other AL teams and what the Astros have been able to do.
Man, it must be sad times in Seattle. 14-game winning streak. You closed the gap during the All-Star break to 9. Julio Rodriguez looks like he's the next star in baseball, and he gets hurt. The Astros sweep you in your own ballpark, and the Astros have proven that, again, they are the king of the American League West, and that rain is not ending anytime soon. What were your thoughts on the Astros sweeping the series in Seattle? 713-780-ESPN. Our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Josh Beard Radio. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Also, when we return, let's get into some of these games a little bit, because there was a lot of storylines throughout the entire weekend. Jose Urquidy, Justin Verlander, Yordan out of the lineup yesterday. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Got him! Justin Verlander showing about as much emotion as we have seen in a regular season game. Another notch in the belt of the Hall of Famer.
That, of course, from the second game of the series on Saturday, when Justin Verlander became the first pitcher in baseball to 13 wins. Nobody has 12 either. He's two games up on the next highest win total in the American League. Verlander was cruising. Like, there was some whispers, oh, he might go the distance here. Mariners made him work in the seventh inning. They had runners at second and third with one out, tying run at third base to go ahead run at second. And then Verlander gets wasn't back-to-back strikeouts, because he struck out the second guy,
right,
walked the next, and struck out the guy after that. Some questionable calls in that inning, too. Might have had a 4 or 5 outs in that inning. But regardless, Justin Verlander showing the fire in that inning, which isn't something you see a whole lot from Justin Verlander, period, especially in the month of July. But he was getting it up to 99 in that inning for the 39-year-old JV off of Tommy John.
It was wild. I saw somebody post the velos for that inning back to back, and it was like 99.3, 98.7, 99.2 down the line. And it was I was out at the lake this weekend. I was having a good time, but that was like during the heat of the day. I'm like, you know what? We're going to watch some Astros when I'm not fishing and catching crappie. So I came inside, and I was ready to cook some fish, but I was watching the Astros. And I came in, I went out for a little bit, and I came back in right at the beginning of that inning. And that last strikeout that he got, those last two strikes that he threw, were two of the most insane 97-mile-an-hour fastballs I've ever seen, period. Not even just from Justin Verlander, that I've ever seen. And look, maybe it's just, it's my bias because I love Justin Verlander so much. Maybe I was a little delirious because I'd been out on the boat in 100-degree weather. But the movement that he had on that second-to-last strike and then the strike for the strikeout was absolutely not. I don't know how anybody in the world could hit either of those two pitches.
Yeah,
he looked so good.
He's one of the best pitchers in the American League. It's he and Shane McClanahan for Tampa Bay, yep. The two best pitchers in my opinion in the AL. But he's contending for another Cy Young. He's been brilliant. Nobody saw this coming. People mocked and scoffed at the idea. Why are the Astros guaranteeing a 39-year-old coming off of Tommy John who's pitched in one game in the last 2 years? Why are they guaranteeing him $50 million over the next two? And now it's like, oh, $25 million for the perennial, for potentially the Cy Young?
Yeah.
Slam dunk. No brainer. It is interesting because people are starting to have the conversation now because Verlander's getting closer and closer to that vesting option of 130 innings. It locks in his player option for next year at $25 million. He's talked about how he does look at that. I don't think he's going to play under this current contract, but people have been talking about, oh, I wonder if Verlander's coming back at the end of the season. He, in my opinion, because Jim Crane has shown Justin Verlander that he's willing to pay Justin Verlander the market value, I just don't see Justin Verlander going anywhere.
I don't either. I think he's happy here. I mean, I think he found the place that he wants to end his career at, and it doesn't feel like it. Look, I just turned 36 and my body is falling apart and I don't want to be done playing sports, right? Justin Verlander's 39 at the top of his game and competing at the highest level in one of the biggest sports in the world. Why would he want to be done? It feels...
Well, he wants to get paid.
Well, yeah. Well, no. I mean, like, he definitely wants to get paid. I think Jim Crane is willing to give him that. I don't think he walks away from the Astros or the game. I think he still wants to play baseball. He wants to play baseball here in Houston. And I think that they're definitely willing to give him the money that he wants. But it's just crazy to see how good he still is at that age. It's frustrating to watch because my body's literally falling apart every time I ever step outside of my house.
Yeah.
But at 39 years old, to be able to be so good that we're still talking about whether or not he's going to get a contract like that to come back and play going into year 40 mm-hmm. of his life is wild to me. But he's so good. It's like he's the Tom Brady of Major League Baseball.
Yeah, he's going to want to get paid, I think. I think he wants Scherzer money, but I think the Astros are going to be willing to give him Scherzer money. They'll figure out a way to do it just like they figured out a way to do it this past offseason. I mean, Jim Crane gave him market value, which was a 39-year-old coming off Tommy John who pitched once in the last 2 years. I believe that Jim Crane's going to give Justin Verlander market value
yeah.
when he's going to be top three in American League Cy Young and potentially the Cy Young.
How do you feel about that, though?
Like, giving him the money?
Yeah.
With this. It's Justin Verlander, and because I'm not guaranteeing him like a five-year deal. Since it's short-term, I'm fine with it.
I think I am, too. You know me. I'm an ageist. Like, I freak out whenever people get older. No offense to anybody who's listening.
Like Yuli Gurriel?
Yeah, like Yuli Gurriel. But it makes me a little bit nervous, but I think I'm on the same page. I think I feel good about them paying him that kind of money, even though he's going to be 40 next season.
Yeah, I'm okay doing it since it's Justin Verlander and he's going to win a Cy Young.
Yeah.
Like I don't love signing huge, like older guys to long-term deals. I'm better with the short-term deal, and I'm okay signing the reigning American League Cy Young. Like, Father Time's going to come into play.
Right.
And if you give him, like, a two-year deal, third-year player option, or however you want to do an option, you can potentially do it like you're doing it with this current contract, which is, like, vesting options to make it a player option. Like, there's going to be a drop-off at some point. Father Time is undefeated. It's going to happen. Right. But I'd rather be, for Justin Verlander, I'd rather eat a year because of the upside that he could win another Cy Young next year. And if you're a championship team, like those are the type of moves that you have to make. But you just don't want to trap yourself into a seven-year deal, and then all of a sudden he's trash in year three because now you put yourself in a really bad spot.
Let's say it's a three-year deal for whatever. And even if you only get 1 year out of him, even if you only get the first season out of him and then year two of that deal, he comes out and he just doesn't look the same and Father Time does catch up, I think I'd still be willing to do that. Like, I'll trade 1 year of Cy Young level Justin Verlander for 2 years of because they're gonna have guys that are gonna be able to come in and step up in those spots when Justin Verlander starts to fall off. But like an 85% Justin Verlander, an 80% Justin Verlander because Father Time caught up, is still a pretty good number two or number three starter in a rotation.
Exactly. Like, it's worth the risk. It's, even though it's a very expensive risk, it's not long term, and he could potentially be an anchor at a pitching staff and could be the anchor of one of the best pitching staffs in baseball, like he's doing this season. Jose Urquidy on Friday, I think this is worth mentioning since, it, you know, I understand it happened Friday and there was two games after he pitched. We've talked a lot about this rotation and how there's a surplus of starting pitchers in this rotation, and it makes James Click's job pretty darn difficult, if we're being completely honest. Because right now, you have six major league starters, like capable starters, that are all roughly like a 3.5 ERA guy. I think Urquidy's still a little bit higher than that, even though he's been brilliant lately. Like, there's going to be a decision that the Astros have to make at some point. Lance McCullers started his rehab assignment. That rehab assignment's going to be up on August 20th.
Yep.
Hunter Brown is making a little bit of noise in AAA, both on the mound with his performance, and then also the fact that he wants to be a big leaguer. He mentioned that at the Futures game, saying, hey, look, I'm forcing the Astros' hand. You know, that's what they told me they wanted, and I feel like I'm doing that. Why am I still pitching in Sugarland? The Jake Odorizzi factor, is he still on this team by August 2nd? So there's a lot of decisions to be made there. And we always talk about the playoff rotation, like pick your best four starters. What's your playoff rotation now versus, you know, what it's going to be in October? What is your decision right now if the playoffs were to start tomorrow? I think Jose Urquidy's pitched himself into one of the best four starters on this team since giving up, since ditching his cutter. We know that he started to throw the cutter this year. He wanted to use it to, you know, make himself a little more versatile, but he ditched it. He didn't like what he was doing with it. He didn't like the way he was pitching by utilizing that cutter. So he's made seven starts since ditching that cutter, Beard. 4-1, 2.58 ERA. 4-1 with a 2.58 ERA. And he goes deep into games. Like, I love Garcia. Right. I love Javier. Huge fans of all of those guys. Jose Urquidy's kind of a workhorse. He carries you deep into games where Javier and Garcia don't always do that.
Well, Urquidy's been that, right? Like, there since the first time I saw him take the mound, there's never been a moment that's too big for Jose Urquidy. And that's the thing that I love about him the most. And when you're talking about going into October, and if you have... if you have three guys and you feel like all of, even if you think Garcia, Christian Javier, and Urquidy are all around that same level, I'm going to choose the guy that has the most experience in those moments, that I feel like goes into moments that aren't too big for him, and he always finds a way to excel and play and pitch well. And Urquidy's done that, and it's kind of weird with this team. We've seen so many guys come out and they've had like slumps to start the season, right? Some of them lasted longer than others, but they're starting to finally pick it up and do more. Urquidy was one of those guys where I had family members that are like, oh, it's time to move on from Jose Urquidy. It's time to move on. A lot of people. And I was just kind of, no, you know, I trust him to figure it out. If we're getting more around like July, August, and he's not pitching well, then okay, I get it. But he has been great lately. And I think I agree with you. I'm going to choose him not just because of what he's done, but because of not what he's done like lately, but what he's done in the past.
Yep.
Now combine that with what he's been able to do lately. His location's been a lot better. His velocity's been really good. He's looked more comfortable on the mound since he ditched the cutter, and that's why I'm going to choose him over the other two guys just based off of experience. And we know he can go out there and single-handedly win a game for this team.
Look, I think, too, that the fact that he's done it before comes into play. Like, I think that stuff does matter. He's won two World Series games in his career.
Right.
So, like, that plays. That matters. Like, that's something that you have to consider. He's actually won three World Series games, but two as a starter. One of those was at a reliever. He's been fantastic. And, look, I love Javier. I love Garcia. But the fact that Urquidy can go deep into games is something that, you know, that matters in the postseason, right? Like, Javier's proven that he can be a bullpen pitcher. We haven't seen it as much from Garcia. But the Astros are going to have some tough decisions to make with their surplus of pitching. I wouldn't be shocked if we see a pitcher or two traded off of this team in 8 days, though. Like, I could see a scenario where Odorizzi's traded, and I can see a scenario where Hunter Brown's traded.
Yeah, I could too, especially with as good as Hunter Brown's been lately. And whether the Astros need to make a move for, is it first base? Do they need to have somebody? Do they need to get another outfield? Whatever it is, whatever people feel like they need to go get, there's some names out there that Hunter Brown could get you a lot. Mm-hmm. And if you take Odorizzi and Hunter Brown and trade those, you could go get a really big name to add to the lineup.
Probably have to be separate trades, because whoever's interested in Brown wouldn't be interested in Odorizzi. Right. But you can get creative. You know, bring in a Tier B prospect, trade out a Tier B prospect. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. 2 o'clock today, a new segment on the show. We're going to have a mailbag Monday. It's basically ask us whatever you want to ask us. You want the Killer Bees to help you out, and it's Beard filling in for blank today. But you want the Killer Bees to answer a question that you have. Can be about anything. It could be about Astros. It could be about the Texans. It could be about dating advice. It could be about food advice. You don't ask Brendan, though. Make sure you get in on that, our mailbag Monday. 713-780-ESPN, the HRNP listener line. Coming up next, we spent all this time talking about the Yankees winning the most games ever. I think that's out of reach for both teams, quite honestly. But how about the Astros chasing some of their own history? Can this team set the record for the most wins in a regular season in franchise history? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
No Joel today. He's out with a hangnail. It's Josh Beard filling in. Killer
That's
Bees on
rude.
ESPN 97.5, no. ESPN 92.5. We got a guy missing with a hangnail and instead got a guy with a sore quad.
Yeah, so. I strained my quad. I can barely walk. Just saying, not that those two things, like, not. I'm not saying that Joel's hangnail isn't serious. I'm just saying, like, some of us know how to work through pain, right? Like, some of us can, I can have a strained quad, I can barely walk. I said that we talked about amputation, that we don't need to go that far, but I just found a way to get all the way up here. And I live all the way out in Cyprus,
Your
too.
Quad or his hangnail?
Huh? Which one?
Which one were you amputating?
Amputating my quad. I think
not
it'd be
his hangnail?
It'd be a lot easier for me in my life if I could just cut all of my limbs off because I keep injuring them trying to relive my glory days playing softball right now.
Yeah.
It's awful. And then I watch Yuli Gurriel field a ball at first base and run out a leg out and slide in at 38 years old. I'm like, I just turned 36 and my body's falling apart. It makes me feel really good.
Yeah. See, I gave up on recreational sports. I retired. I hung up the New Balances, I guess.
Yeah.
I pulled my hamstring one too many times, and I was like, I'm out. I'm done.
I can't do it. I want to. Like, there's a part of me that's like, I want to step away and not do recreational sports, but then they're
being fun.
Put in my face, and I can't stop.
Okay. So anything you put in your face, you just can't stop.
Usually, yeah. Cakes, pizza, softball, basketball.
What are other things
beer?
You put in Beard's face that he won't stop? 713-780-3776.
All right, I see where we're going.
7107 said, just curious why everyone keeps saying the Yankees are the best team in baseball when the Dodgers have the number one record. I know they just overtook New York, but they have been ahead of Houston for a while, and it seemed like they have the easiest schedule going forward, while New York and Houston will have to battle it out. New York and Houston, they'll battle it out in the standings. They won't battle it out on the field. They won't play again in the regular season. I'll be honest with you, I don't really keep up a whole lot with the National League. Like, I'll glance at it. I'll watch a few games whenever they're on national TV, but I study the American League. I don't do it as much with the National League, if I'm being completely honest with you. Someone else texting in, 8875, what are your thoughts on the power rankings that came out today? Sweep the Yankees in a doubleheader, and they're still ranked above the Astros. I guess it's not like college rankings. You beat somebody, you move about them. You move above them. I guess that's what he meant. The way I look at power rankings in professional sports is I literally don't. And I saw a lot of people on Twitter responding to these. I don't even know who put them out there. That's how little mind I pay attention to it. Power rankings in professional sports matter about as much as that dust on the floor over there. Like, they literally do not matter. There are qualifications in every professional sport that qualify you for a playoff. And in a playoff, you battle it out on the field. So power ranking, I never look at a power ranking in professional sports. I'll be completely honest with you.
I don't usually either, because more often than not, sometimes some power rankings are different, but more often than not, it's one or two guys making objective decisions about teams that may or may not be true. I care way more about standings. I care way more about win streaks and what's actually happening on the field or on the court than I do about some guy's arbitrary opinion on why a team is doing a little bit better or doing a little bit worse.
Mm-hmm.
Power rankings are dumb. And to your point about the NL, it's not even an AL-NL thing for me right now with the Astros. I'm not paying attention to anybody that isn't the Yankees or the Dodgers.
Huh.
There are two teams that when the Yankees are on, if they're on national TV, if I can catch a game or if I can use some of my resources to watch a Yankees game, I'll watch it.
What do you mean?
Nothing. And the Dodgers. I do the same thing with the Dodgers. But it's not NL-AL for me. It's really only the two teams that matter the most, who they're going to see in the ALCS and who they're going to see in the World Series. And those are the only two teams that I'm watching. It's really weird. In football, I don't do that. In basketball, I don't do that. But in baseball, I'm like, And I think it's maybe because I'm a little spoiled, and we're all a little spoiled right now as Astros fans, where it's like, nah, I'm not going to worry about the measly Toronto Blue Jays. I'm only going to worry about the two teams that matter.
Siri Jeinfeld on Twitter, he says, I'll reiterate what I basically said over the weekend. The Astros look like a team that got some much-needed rest, and if the last five games or any indication of what's to come, the Astros are about to be a very scary team in the second half. I would go a step further than that, too. Like, I honestly think the Astros get a little bit bored playing the Angels and the A's and the Rangers, and with the imbalanced schedule, you're playing them 20-something times. But when it's time to, like, you know, get up for a moment, Yankees coming into town for Minute Maid. You're going on the road at Yankee Stadium. I know you won two of those four, but you led a majority of that series, almost all of that series. The Mariners, oh, they're chomping at the bit to get the Astros in town. We're waiting back with a sold-out T-Mobile. We've won 14 in a row. We're coming for you, Houston. Oh, my goodness. They just sweep the Mariners out of their own ballpark. I think it's an element of boredom. And the Astros did kind of limp into the All-Star break. But I think that as soon as it's a quality opponent, there's something at stake. There's something on the line. It gets the Astros' attention, and they get up for it.
If I'm an AL playoff contender right now, not named the Astros, and I'm looking at the series against the Yankees, and I'm looking at the series against the Mariners, I'm watching this Astros team, and I'm telling myself, we have to do whatever it takes to belay facing off against them in the playoffs. We don't want to face off against them soon. We want to try to meet them in the ALCS and see what we can do against them, because they are not a team that I want to go against in the playoffs. I think one of the biggest things for me, one of the coolest things for me, is they just have so many guys stepping up in the right moments that aren't your Yordans, that aren't your Altuves and your Tuckers, right? Like, you have Corey Lee can come into a game and get a big hit. Matijevic can come into a game and get a big hit. Maldonado can go get a home run when everybody's been doubting his ability to hit the ball all season. And they just have these other guys that are maybe they're role players, or maybe they're just fill-ins, or they're young guys that are stepping up these moments. That's what championship teams do.
Yeah.
Depth is the number one championship winner in most sports, most especially baseball. And they look so good from top to bottom right now.
Yeah, they're clutch, too. Like you mentioned, the big hits. I think they can improve their depth, too. Like, can you upgrade over J.J. Matijevic as a left-handed bat off the bench? Yeah, and I mean, you've had some injuries, too. I mean, Brantley's on the injured list. But I think you can trade for a corner infielder and move Yuli into that corner infielder role. I think you can trade for an outfielder to upgrade over like a Chaz. So I think that the depth is good. You're right. I think it's something that they'll probably look to improve, too, over the next 8 days. So the Astros, after the game yesterday, after the sweep against the Seattle Mariners, of course, they'll open up a series against Oakland tonight. But the Astros are 64-32. Through 96 games this year, 667 winning percentage. They are on pace to tie their all-time winning mark in a single season. 2019, which that team was loaded, Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander, you still had Springer, you still had Correa, Yordan was up, Tucker was up, although not used as used as much as he should have been over Reddick. Thank you, A.J. Hinch, for that. But the Astros are on pace for 107 wins, which would match their 2019 mark for the most wins in history in the regular season. Top five all-time in Major League Baseball to crack the top five all-time is 110. Can this Astros team, first, keep up with that 2019 mark of 107? And can they get to that 110 mark, too, and crack the all-time top five?
I mean, this all comes down to health and how guys stick around towards the end of the season. If they start to rest people, or if somebody gets a little banged up and they want to save them a little bit for the playoffs. I think they can hit the 107. I'm a little bit more skeptical about the 110, which is weird because it's only three extra wins. But I think the 107 can get hit. The 110, I'm a little bit more skeptical of, just because of what you said earlier. They get bored. They get bored during the regular season. And so they might throw away a couple of games that they shouldn't throw away that could help them get to that 110 or could help them get to that 107. So it may be a little bit more difficult. But, I mean, we're literally talking about, oh, man, is this team going to be able to get a top five record in Major League history?
Yeah.
Like, that's wild. That's cool to see. I'm more skeptical of 110. But I think 107 is definitely possible.
The it gunned in my head, and if I was I'm making a $1 million bet here. Not that I have the means to do so.
Right.
But gunned in my head, if I had to go one way, I don't think the Astros get there. And part of that is I think that there is going to be some sort of complacency that sets in, which I'm okay with that. And Dusty's even referred to this too. He's like, we would love to have the number one seed in the American League, but we're not going to beat ourselves up doing it. Like, does it mean Jose Altuve gets some more days off down the stretch because you know you're preserving his fatigue for the World Series, like for the playoffs? You should do that.
Right.
We know that the best player on this team is Yordan Alvarez, and Yordan Alvarez has a busted up hand that forces him to miss every third game, it seems, and sometimes forces him to go to the injured list. So, like, he's going to probably need some rest. You still don't know about Michael Brantley. I don't think the Astros are ever going to go to a five-man rotation until, like, September, probably. Mm-hmm. So that means you have a sixth guy that's not as good as the other five. I don't think the Astros are chasing regular season success. We saw it in the All-Star game with, you know, Yordan going on the IL with Jose Altuve, despite playing the first two games before the All-Star break, saying, nah, I'm good. I'd rather stay home and rest. When we even see with Justin Verlander, he's pitching like every seventh or eighth day now. So the Astros aren't going to chase the regular season records. They're not going to chase the 107. They're not going to chase the 110. They know that their priority is what they do in the postseason. So they're going to give Yordan days off. They're going to give Altuve days off. They're going to make sure Verlander and Fromber don't throw 225 innings. I know I'm being extreme there. But their focus is the postseason. I'm good with that. If it means winning 99 games because I'm doing that as opposed to 107, if it means that I surrender the top seed in the American League to the Yankees and I get a two seed, the priority to me is making sure I'm into the playoffs healthy.
Well, it's the same conversation we had about the home run derby, right? About the Mariners owner hugging J-Rod,
yeah,
and the
big
home
moment.
Run.
It's the highlight of the year.
Yeah, like that doesn't matter to this team. It doesn't matter to these players. It doesn't matter to the front office. It doesn't matter to Dusty. None of that matters. The only thing that matters is making it to the World Series and winning and doing your best to win. Their concern right now isn't 107 or 110. Their concern right now is 181 and 200. That's the point differential for both the Dodgers and the Yankees in games that they've played so far this season. They're concerned about what the Yankees and the Dodgers are doing because those are the two teams that they have to really, really fight through to try to take home that championship. They're looking towards the ALDS, the ALCS, the World Series. They're not looking at wins in the regular season. I wouldn't be either. I wouldn't care about that. Would it be cool if I got it? Absolutely. Am I going to go out every day and try to win games? Yeah, but to Dusty and your point, I'm not going to do that at the detriment of being able to make a deep playoff run and really accomplish the goal that I'm trying to accomplish.
Do you think the Astros can match their mark or beat their mark of 107 in 2019? Also, I want to discuss the Yordan Alvarez hand concerns, and what is your level of concern of it as well? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Real fun. Get low when the whistle goes. Sports. ESPN 97.5. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Josh Beard in for Blankers. Blankers back to school shopping today. Yordan Alvarez was not in the lineup yesterday. He has a banged up hand. Now, this is the same hand that has cost him a trip to the injured list. It's like they've had imaging done. They've had the x-rays. They've had the MRIs. Yordan Alvarez has told the media through a translator that there's not a break. Like there's not a break in the hand.
Right.
So we know that the injury, if we believe what the Astros are telling us, and usually when the Astros say stuff, they're usually honest and truthful.
Yeah.
Now they're very vague and they do whatever they possibly can not to tell us stuff. But usually when they tell us stuff, it's accurate. Like I've never really seen the Astros lie. Like they've been vague and they've been really weird about timelines and things like that.
Right.
But when they say something's not broken, it's usually not broken. When they say that, you know, what's another example I can use? Like Pena with his thumb. There's not a serious concern there. Okay, it's not a serious concern. Dusty Baker told Buster Olney in that Sunday night baseball game against, I believe it was the Yankees, it might have been the Mets, that Yordan, they thought it was the hammett, and it wasn't the hammett, which is that little hook bone in the hand that caused you to miss 6 to 8 weeks. They remove it, bada boom, bada bang. So there's not a broken bone in Yordan's hand, but it's obviously been something that causes discomfort. It causes swelling in the hand as well. I don't know what you could possibly do. And what's frustrating, I think, from like an Astros fan's perspective or people that watch the Astros that are outside of the walls of actually in that organization is that no one knows what's going on other than it's swelling up. It's forcing them to miss a few games every now and then, but it's not broken. Like, I don't know the solution for Yordan Alvarez other than like, let's just buckle in and we're going to have to see Yordan take every fourth day off.
Yeah, I really think that, look, being the high-octane, high-level athlete that I am also dealing with a hand issue from the incredible slow-pitch softball games that I have been playing. But my hand, if you look at my hand right now, the webbing of my right hand is swollen. Nothing's broken. There's nothing wrong. It's just like a soft tissue thing that's swollen, and it hurts.
Yeah,
like
I'm going to compare you to a 25-year-old athlete who's the best hitter in baseball.
Well, all I'm saying is I understand what Yordan's going through at a deeply personal level. But if it's a soft tissue thing that's just swelling up, there's really not much he can do. He can't get the full rest that he would need for it to really clear up. So, yeah, I'm totally fine with him just taking every fourth game off and then just working through it, getting him as healthy as he can be, getting his hand as right as it can be once we head into the playoffs, and then just try to power through it and see what you can do. I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah, I really don't know the solution. Like, there's not broken, because I've heard people talk about this, and I'm saying, like, if you knew it was broken, then you should go in there, have the surgery, get him back in 6 to 8 weeks.
Yes.
But that's clearly not the case, because I don't think that James Click is foolish enough to be like, okay, let's have him play through a broken bone in his hand
right
whenever we can have surgery to repair this, and he would be back by the postseason, and you have a comfortable lead. There's no sense in that. That would be idiotic. Like, you should be – that's a fireable offense. So I know for a fact, like, at least reading – I guess I shouldn't say a fact, but I think beyond a reasonable doubt, it's fair to say that Yordan Alvarez does not have a break in his hand. He has told us that.
Yeah.
There's no way the Houston Astros would allow him to play with a broken bone in his hand. He smashes the baseball with this discomfort in his hand anyways.
Right.
So, like, it's maddening, it's frustrating, it's worrisome, but I believe that there's not a broken bone there.
Well, just look at the Astros' track record. It's not like they play fast and loose with the players on their team. They don't do that with health. They are more conservative, I feel like, than a lot of other teams when it comes to the health of their players, especially the health of their stars. Whenever a guy is out, they give him a little bit of extra time to get right before they bring him back, before they send him to a rehab assignment. They give him that extra time. I don't feel like the Astros, James Click, Dusty Baker, and this team is a team that's really like, no, you have to play through it. We are going to force you. That hasn't been their MO at all. And this comes down to what's the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal isn't to roll them out there in the regular season and force them to go play through major injuries when they could probably alleviate the situation and have them come back. No, the goal is playoffs. The goal is to make as much noise in the playoffs and be as successful as you can. And so I don't think that they would do anything to jeopardize that.
Yeah. It's also the fact that he's crushing the baseball. Like, if he was, like, mirrored in this 0-for-12
right.
slump, and he, like, any time he made contact, he's shaking his hand, or, you know, he's had a bunch of weak contact. But the dude's hitting home runs, like, his first at-bat off the injured list. He's banging doubles off the left center field wall. So, like...
Just like me.
My concern level is not very high here. Like, it's worrisome. Like, it's an issue that he's missing every third game because of a hand soreness. But if he's going to play after he's sitting for a day, and he's going to be banging doubles off the wall, like, I'm not that concerned.
I think it's just like you said earlier. Like, it's annoying. It's frustrating to see. You would like for him to not be doing that, but it is what it is. And if this is what keeps him healthy enough for the playoffs, if this is what keeps him to where he doesn't have to be out, or it's not going to exacerbate the injury even more to where he has to take an extended period of time out, then I'm totally fine with it. Whatever they have to do to make sure that Yordan is there and playing throughout October, that's all I care about.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at with Yordan. If the Astros aren't concerned about, you know, he's getting, you know, at-bats in three of the four games that he's playing in, and he's still smashing it all over the place, like, I'm not that concerned with Yordan. You know, it's swelling up on him, but there's no diagnosis. It's weird. 6030 texting into the show, 713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, said, so I think it's fair to say we forced the Mariners' hand, and they're trading for Soto now. So that's the one. That's the one spot where I don't want Soto to go.
Yeah.
Like, if he goes to the Cardinals, great. Padres, great. Dodgers, Giants, great. I don't want to see him really in the American League, but the Mariners are at the top of the list. Like, Yankees are going to have stars all the time, so, like, he kind of fits with the Yankees.
Right.
I don't want him to be in this division.
I definitely don't want him to be in this division, but also at the same time, I mean, it would be problematic. It's a toss-up for me between the Yankees and the Mariners. The Yankees, to me, are a much bigger problem overall when it comes to championship aspirations than Juan Soto going to the Mariners. It'd be annoying to have to face off against him in the division, right?
Yep.
But I don't think right now, and who knows what they can do management-wise moving forward, I don't think that I'm so worried about the Mariners that I would put I would put them as the less preferred destination over the Yankees right now. Right now, I would say definitely the Yankees, but the Mariners are definitely are they're a close second. Wouldn't love it on the Dodgers either, but we don't have in the NL. Whatever, it's fine. But the Mariners are number two for me. Yankees are number one. I don't want him to go there.
Yeah, I think Blanker said Yankees too, which I get. I just feel like stars go to New York, so like I just assume that the Yankees are always going to have stars anyway. So like whatever.
Yeah,
like,
but one fewer is the way to go. Like I they're always going to have stars.
Yeah,
but anytime we can hope that they don't have that extra star, I'm going to hope for that.
No, I get it. I get it. But National League. Best case scenario.
Right.
St. Louis trade for Soto. That would be just fantastic.
Yeah. I would hey, Angels, trade for Soto. Just let him sit and be sad out in the outfield with Mike Trout. Could you imagine like the two shot of Mike Trout and Juan Soto just both being sad that their pitchers are tipping their pitches from the outfield? It'd be hilarious.
Yeah, I don't want a team to have Soto, Ohtani, and Trout.
You don't want Trout, Soto, Ohtani back to back to back?
No.
I don't think that it would make them that much better to where we'd have to worry about them.
Yeah. Sad news from the Houston Texans. Rookies reported yesterday, and one of their rookies, John Mechie, who the Texans traded up for and drafted in the second round, tweeted out yesterday through the Texans, recently I was diagnosed with APL, the most curable form of leukemia. I'm currently receiving great medical care, am in good spirits, and I expect to make a recovery at a later point in time. As a result of the diagnosis, I will likely not be playing football this season. My main focus will be on my health and recovery. Thank you in advance for your support and well wishes. I cannot wait to come back stronger than ever. God bless. My family has been affected with leukemia, as I'm sure most of your families have. It's a terrible, terrible thing, and I'm sure that all of us in some form or fashion have experienced it. So this is something that's far greater than football.
Yeah.
Like, we hope to see John Mechie at some point play football for the Houston Texans, and he's saying here that it is his mission, it is his goal, and thank goodness it's the most curable form of leukemia as well. But there's certain things that happen in life that are far more important than radio shows,
right,
sports, the Texans, the game, whatever. So this is hard to see, and I hope that that John Mechie, you know, beats this, rings the bell, and eventually plays football again. But very sad to see this, and wishing John Mechie the third well as he tries to beat it.
Yeah, it's and I'm disappointed for him because I can't imagine being a guy who's trying to come back from an injury, trying to come into a new team and make a name for himself. And then, I mean, this isn't just this isn't being hit with an obstacle, right? This is getting hit across the head with a shovel. And I feel awful for him, but I wish him nothing but the best. I hope he gets, he takes the time to spend time with his family and get better and get through this and then have that comeback story. That would be cool to see it, you know, next 2 years, 3 years from now, work his way back through this difficult thing and have that comeback story. I think he deserves this, but it sucks to see him go through this. And, you know, lymphoma and leukemia have been two things that have ravaged my family and my wife's family. And so it is good that at least it's the most curable form and it's not the worst news that he could have gotten, but nobody's ever happy after this, and I feel awful for him. So I hope nothing but the best for him.
Yeah. Dr. Lowe, one of the Texans doctors, another several over there as well. Texans have great team doctors.
Yeah.
They also, it's City of Houston, great medical center over there near near Rice. So I think he's in a good spot. You know, of course, with the Houston Texans, the doctors that they have, and then, of course, the medical center, one of the best medical centers in the entire country, if not the world. So thank goodness for that, and wishing John Mechie a speedy recovery, trying to beat this, and hope to see him on the field as soon as possible for the Houston Texans. And we'll talk about what it means for the Houston Texans, all of that, at a different date. The Houston Texans training camp does open on Friday. Rookies reported yesterday, which is always cruel to me that they're forcing these rookies to report on a Sunday. Sunday morning, too, right after a Saturday night. They're rookies. Let them have fun in the city. And then veterans will report tomorrow. So a lot of the Texans are starting to report to camp. Practice, of course, will open up on Friday. The 29th will be the first day of practice. So football season is here. And with the training camp opening up on the 29th, we've been counting down our Texan storylines, the top 10 storylines entering the 2022 season. Storyline number 5, it's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Hall of Fame, Billy Sims. And you're listening to ESPN 97.5.